Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
I'm Ruth Jackson, part of the Unbelievable team, and you are listening to a classic replay programme from the archives. The episode you are about to hear was first broadcast on Premier Christian Radio on the 27th of June 2009. It explores whether science is at odds with Christianity, and the guests are atheist PZ Myers and Christian Dennis Alexander. You can get in touch with the show and listen to more episodes at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable.
You're unbelievable. That is the title of the show, Unbelievable. And we're asking today, is Christian faith at odds with science? Well, PZ Myers is a biologist and associate professor at the University of Minnesota. He's an outspoken atheist, regularly blogging on science and faith. We're going to be hearing his views. Quite a controversial figure in many ways. Dr. Dennis Alexander is our Christian here in the studio in London. He's director of the Faraday Institute for Science and Religion. He's done a lot of writing recently on evolution. It aims to show that Christian faith is perfectly compatible with an evolutionary scientific understanding of the world. It's going to be a fascinating discussion as you join us across the next hour and a half here on Unbelievable. PZ, you are a first-time guest on this programme, but certainly not unknown, especially in the blogosphere world, because you run the science blog Pharyngula. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, though.
You are pronouncing it correctly.
Oh, excellent. But you're well known as a quite an outspoken atheist. You might be camped, as it were, in the new atheist camp. Tell us a little bit about your background, though, and did you ever have any kind of faith influence in your life growing up?
Oh, yes. I was brought up a moderate progressive Lutheran and had no problem with religion as a child, but then I outgrew it. I basically realized that I didn't believe anything that the pastor was telling me, and I left it as a teenager.
So was science, as it were, a part of that, a kind of discovery of things like evolution and that type of thing?
Oh, very much so. I mean, I was always one of those little science nerd kids who was poking around and dissecting things and, you know, building model airplanes and so forth. And so I was very focused on scientific issues, even as a child. And where I found religion intensely inadequate is that it does not answer anything. Most of its answers are wrong. It's a distraction from the interesting stuff that's going on in the universe.
And so you obviously went into science as a career. That was a passion, I guess. Do you feel then, yes, that science does offer those answers that you felt religion lacked?
Well, the key thing is that science offers a process, a method for approaching those answers. We definitely can't say that we've got all the answers, and we're a long way from getting it even close to all the answers. But the satisfying thing is it provides you a productive path to approach the problems.
You now are pretty outspoken, actually, in your criticism of Christianity. I mean, why do you feel that it is such a dangerous thing, such a misleading type of thing?
Again, it's related to my interest in science, is because I think what religion does is it fosters a false sense of truth, that it misleads people into thinking that they have the answers when they actually don't. And it also leads to a kind of complacency about how we're going to approach the future. You know, in particular, here in the United States, we have this big problem with creationism, which greatly focuses the issues because that's purely a religious movement. It's driven entirely by religion, and it really takes something like religion to make people believe something as crazy as the fact that the Earth is 6,000 years old.
So, obviously, you're not a fan of religion, but, I mean, many people, you know, might say, well, as long as the science that's being done is okay, it's okay for people to believe in God, it's okay for people to have a faith which may help them in ways that perhaps science can't. But you're pretty, you know, you shun that kind of attitude as well. I mean, what you might call an accommodationist kind of view.
Well, no, you're misstating my position a little bit. No, I think it's perfectly fine for scientists to do whatever they want in their spare time. I mean, if they like to sit around and watch football, that's fine. It's not science. I don't care. You know, everybody does this sort of thing. If they want to go to church on Sunday, sure, go ahead. It's no problem. But the problem is when you start taking your religion or your football as something that dictates what your scientific or political or economic answers ought to be.
That's when you have a problem with it. I mean,
that's right.
You're somewhat controversial, though, in the way you sometimes put this across. I mean, about a year ago, you caused a lot of controversy by taking a communion wafer from a Roman Catholic church. Someone had managed to procure one for you, and you desecrated it. This was, I mean, what were you trying to prove by that? And obviously, you got a lot of response to that.
Yes, it was very entertaining. I wasn't trying to prove anything. What I was trying to demonstrate was that religion cannot dictate what people believe. The background of that particular incident was that there was a student in Florida who had taken a communion wafer from the church and practically been assaulted over it, and who was turned into sort of this national laughingstock by the Catholic League in the United States, which accused him of holding Jesus hostage and committing a great crime and so forth. And so what I was trying to do is demonstrate that, no, this is not a great crime. It's just a cracker. It's okay if you desecrate this. It's fine if Catholics want to practice their rituals, but they cannot tell other people that they have to be obedient to the strange theology behind their rituals.
Well, obviously, it's obviously an approach which not everyone shares. You know, a lot of people were very concerned that you were taking that kind of an approach too. You know, but then, hey, it got the issues out there in the spotlight, and in many ways,
exactly.
That's I guess your main concern. PZ, let's go now to Dennis Alexander. Dennis, you're the director of the Faraday Institute for Science and Religion. That's based at St. Edmund's College in Cambridge. You're a Christian, though, and you don't see yourself a contradiction between your scientific background and your Christian faith.
Yeah, that's correct, actually, Justin. Yeah, I've spent the last 40 years of my life in the biological research community, and doing science is a wonderful enterprise. I'd recommend it to anybody. I was already a Christian when I went into the sciences, so I suppose I've grown up with both Christian faith and science together. They're both equally valued in my own family background and so forth. So I have to say I've never seen them as being in any necessary conflict. Now, obviously, there are occasions like as first cousins occasionally squabble. You know, there are bound to be squabbles occasionally. We see that in the history of science and faith and so forth. But and today, as PZ mentioned, there are things like creationism and so forth. So there obviously are some areas of conflict here. I mean, you cannot be a biologist and actually believe the Earth is, you know, less than 10,000 years old. I just don't think that sort of thing is possible. But having said that, you know, I think the problem, of course, in talking about science and religion is that religion is not a catch-all. There's no such thing, actually, as religion, of course. So, I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of different religious beliefs. There are different religious systems around the world and so forth. And so I think that's what makes the debate a little bit complex. So often when people are discussing this, they're actually, they've got different things in their head about what they're talking about. That's part of the problem in this discussion.
I mean, I have, in a sense, for that reason, asked, is Christian faith at odds with science? But as you say, there is a diversity of Christian faith. I mean, you are what you would describe as a theistic evolutionist, i.e. you believe wholeheartedly in the theory of evolution, whereas other Christians in different areas may see they have problems with that. Obviously, their views not being represented on the show today. But the problem, I guess, from PZ's point of view is this is what religion does. It just takes away clear thinking. It just kind of, you know, introduces stuff that's going to muddy the waters.
Well, I think it's interesting if you look at, obviously, the history of science. It's had deep roots, first of all, in Greek philosophy. Secondly, later on in the era from the 9th century to the 15th, 16th century, when Islamic science, the science in this Muslim world, was going very strongly, which then declined. And, of course, Christians have been very involved in the origins of modern science. I mean, one only has to look at the composition of the Royal Society founded in 1660 to realize, you know, that Christians saw science as very much their mission, if you like, to understand God's world, to understand how it works, how it's put together, and gives a great motivation for exploring it. So I think the idea that somehow Christians are peripheral to the scientific discourse is simply not held up by history, actually.
I wonder, though, what that looks like today. I mean, you mentioned the Royal Society. Of course, Michael Rees was, in a sense, ousted from his position there last year because, in some degree, because of the fact he has a Christian faith. I mean, do you feel that there is a militant streak in the scientific community that is raising the kind of voice that PZ is raising?
Yes, clearly I think there is a streak there. I mean, you've got the new atheists, as they're called, that you already mentioned. Some of them are scientists, not very many, actually. I mean, my own experience within the scientific community is they're quite a rare breed. And I'll be honest here, I mean, I think a lot of my secular atheist, actually, scientific colleagues think that some of the new atheists are just a bit odd. I mean, why would you bother to go to all that effort to be a sort of very vigorous atheist and try and convert other people to atheism in an open society where, you know, we're living? I mean, I think the tendency much more these days is within the scientific community, it's a very liberal, very tolerant community. And if you want to have a religious belief, that's fine. It's, you know, some people play golf, other people have religion. You know, so I don't think, to my mind, it seems a bit odd if people get very excited about it.
Okay. Well, PZ, to bring you back in at this point, in a sense, that's what you were saying. You don't mind people having private beliefs as long as they don't impact on society particularly or other people's rights and indeed on scientific progress. But nonetheless, you do believe that Christian faith is at odds with science. I mean, would it be fair to say you don't believe you can be a good scientist and a person who believes in God?
No, it wouldn't be right. there are some very, very good scientists who are pretty fervent in their belief. You know, here in the United States, we have Francis Collins, of course, who's parading around all the time with his religion, you know, first in the forefront. But he's also, at the same time, a very good scientist. So there really isn't that kind of conflict that, you know, human beings are complicated creatures who can hold all kinds of mutually contradictory beliefs at the same time. And so, yeah, we've got lots of great scientists.
But you
go back to Isaac Newton, who's also very religious, and sure, great scientist. Nobody's going to argue with you on that.
But you would describe it as mutually contradictory, a belief in God and
the ideas are mutually contradictory, correct. And what it means is that people like Francis Collins, when he goes into the lab, takes aside the clerical collar and forgets about religion for a while and focuses on just the science. If you're a good scientist, you do not bring religion into the laboratory at all.
I think that probably, Dennis, would it be fair to say that Francis Collins very much stands in the same kind of stance towards his science and his faith as you do, in as much as you see that they're perfectly compatible?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's correct. I mean, I think we're from the same kind of tradition. By the way, Francis Collins has no clerical collar, to the best of my knowledge, just to clarify. I agree with PZ in the sense that, I mean, I'm not one for bringing God talk into the laboratory, as that was his expression, because I don't think, you know, clearly, ever since, again, probably the emergence of modern science, 16th and 17th century, where natural philosophers, as they were then called, began to give up the idea of looking for ultimate causes or teleological science. They began giving up really on Aristotelian science, where you wanted to look for a kind of telos for everything, an end for everything, and started saying, well, hey, let's just find out how it works, what's the machinery, what's the mechanisms, and so forth. So you get the new mechanistic philosophy, as it was called already in the 17th century. And the mechanistic philosophy was born by people, Robert Boyle would be an obvious example, but people who had a deep, profound belief in God. But I think the point here is, you know, as a Christian, I don't want to bring God talk into the laboratory for all kinds of reasons. And one of the reasons, obviously, is because of the Christian doctrine of creation. It'd be very odd to try and, you know, bring God into the present gaps of our scientific knowledge, the old God of the gaps type of argument, which I think is a hopeless kind of argument. So as far as I'm concerned, the people in my lab, you know, can be of any faith or none. They can do great science.
But you wouldn't agree, presumably, with PZ that your belief in God is mutually contradictory with your belief in the scientific process?
Not at all. No, I'm not quite sure where that comes from. I mean, PZ hasn't actually told us where he feels the contradictions
well,
lie.
Let's go to that, yeah. So PZ, what are these contradictions?
Oh, well, you see, in order to talk about an incompatibility, what you first have to do is you have to specify what purposes are in conflict. So, you know, for instance, if you just like to go to church because you enjoy the company, and then the purpose of religion for you is to reinforce social bonds, so then you'd say, well, there's no incompatibility between science and religion. But what you have to do is you have to put it in an appropriate context. For this debate, that context is a shared specific purpose for both science and religion. As Dennis said, you know, that what they want to do is understand God's world and how it works. And when we do that, we do see an incompatibility, if we focus on just that. In this case, what we're trying to do is address these big questions about the nature of the universe, about our history, about how we function. And that's where the conflict lies, because religion keeps giving us different answers, very different answers from what science does. And so, you know, operationally, what we see is that religion is a process that gives us incorrect answers, or, to be more charitable, it gives us different answers than what good old naturalistic, materialistic science gives us. And, you just can't deny that is a conflict.
Are you talking about creationism there, PZ? Is that what you have in mind in particular?
Oh, I'm talking about anything you want to talk about. That where religious scientists work is, you know, where they function properly is where they don't try and say, well, I believe this because the Bible says so, or this is a conclusion that I derive from studying St. Augustine or whatever, where they actually do that normal material science. And then what we have is a lot of theistic scientists who are very good at that and who can easily, like you are, switch gears and talk about the results of experiments rather than the analysis of the Bible.
Is your point, just to try and crystallize it, PZ, that because Dennis believes that Jesus is the Son of God and that he died and he rose again, and that is at odds with your understanding of science and what is possible within the bounds of science, that is the contradiction that lies at the heart of Dennis's faith.
If Dennis tries to argue that from a scientific basis, if he tries to argue on, you know, the normal scientific principles he uses in the lab for that particular answer, then yes, we're in conflict. And I think where this actually works out for most people is that they don't try to. I bet you Dennis does not try to sit down and give me an explanation in physiological terms for how Jesus could have been resurrected.
Let's
allow the way religion works.
Allow Dennis to answer that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there are many, many things that science can't address. I mean, I don't think science... science isn't really up to the sort of Herculean task of trying to... decide between different political systems or metaphysical systems, for that matter. I mean, I don't think science tells us whether, you know, democracy is right or other systems of government. I mean, science is surely, you know, brilliant at what it does. It's brilliant at answering certain kinds of questions. It just seems to me that there are whole swathes of life, including our own, obviously, personal biographies, our personal experience, which aren't really publishable in scientific journals. And you know, politics would be one, and history, and I mean, isn't that why we have different disciplines in our different departments in our universities? It's a recognition of the fact that every discipline has its own particular way of justifying its beliefs and publishing them. Science has its own, history has its set of... isn't that what we're talking about? I don't quite see why we have to try and make everything conform to a sort of scientific... That seems to be like scientism, which is a bit of an old-fashioned...
The question is there a conflict between science and religion? We're not saying, is there a conflict between moral behavior and religion, although I would say there is, or between going to the park and religion, or between, you know, having a cup of coffee with a friend and religion. We're saying, is there a conflict between science and religion? And if we've narrowed the domain right there in the question, and that's what I'm saying, is that in that domain, religion is wrong. It gives us incorrect answers.
I mean, like what? I'm still not clear what these incorrect answers are, so you have to give a few illustrations so we know what they are, PZ.
Well, I've already mentioned creationism, that creationism is a perfectly legitimate religious belief. It's built on an analysis of the Bible, right? And yet, as we would both agree, it's not right. It doesn't fit the facts in the observable world. And the way we addressed that question was by using science and not by using religion.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we've sort of agreed. You know, I'm not a creationist, as you've probably already gathered. I'm a passionate Darwinian. Just to take that one example, I mean, this is obviously is where you get a whole range of views within not only Christianity but other religions as well. But so we're all agreed, okay, so that science is incompatible with the belief that the Earth is very young and so forth. But it does seem to me that doesn't really begin to address what certainly Christian faith is all about. And young earth creationism is a 20th century phenomena. It started in the 1920s and gathered steam in the 1960s. So, it is a pretty modern kind of movement in many ways. So, you're picking on various things that we might agree on. I think there are lots of things in Christian faith as it's practiced as an institution where I would probably part company from it. But can you give, are there any other incompatibilities that you would like to?
I mean, specifically, I guess ones that Dennis sitting here holds. You know, I mean, would the example I gave of the resurrection of Jesus, would that be for you one of those examples of a belief that is at odds with what science tells us?
Well, one thing we're steering a little bit incorrectly here is that you're trying to get specific conclusions that contradict, and that's not so much of an issue because, as we all know, science will change as the facts warrant. That this is not a fixed body of facts when we talk about science. That what we have is a difference in methodology. That what we have is actually an operational difference. That in science, you see, science is this process, as you know, it's a body of tools, it has a long history of success in giving us these robust, consistent answers. And we use techniques like observation, experiment, critical checking results to get an answer. And we never entirely trust our answers, so we keep pushing harder at them, okay? So that's the toolkit that we use in the laboratory. Religion, on the other hand, uses a different body of techniques, and that's techniques to explain the nature of the universe. It uses things like tradition and dogma and authority and a detailed legalistic analysis of source text to dictate what the nature of reality should be. It's always wrong from an empirical perspective, although, I do have to credit theologians with some of the most amazingly intricate logical exercises when they try to work this stuff out. But the end result of all this kind of clever wankery, though, is that some people come to different conclusions than other people. It is not empirically robust. And so that's what I mean by a conflict, that, it's not necessarily in the body of facts that we have at our disposal. What it is how we get at those facts. And every scientist knows how to do science, and it doesn't involve, consulting an authority who's got the text that you will carefully analyze to figure out what the answer should be. It's sitting down at the bench and doing an experiment.
Yeah. Can I come back on that one perhaps a little bit? I mean, I'm agreeing with you and disagreeing. I mean, I think on the point of view of dogma and texts and authorities and so forth, I mean, lots of sociologists of science have had a field day on this one, because actually what, in fact, you do have to do. If you're coming in as a PhD student into my lab, you cannot recreate every experiment that's ever been done before. Right. You actually have to, you know, depend upon a huge body of literature, which is taken as authoritative, before you can even get cracking and do any new experiments. So there is a kind of, if you like, a dogma. It's not quite the same, I agree, but there are parallels, actually. And so I think we need to be careful we don't overstate the case. I mean, the scientific community, like any human community, has its authorities, it has its invisible college that controls certain fields, as we all know, you know, that actually has a big impact on what gets published, what doesn't. So there are authority figures within science that are extremely influential. Now, that's a sociological analysis. So I'm sort of disagreeing with a part of the sociology of science, the way it works. But I'm agreeing with you in thinking, yes, of course, the way science is done is dictated, really, by the very limited set of questions that science is trying to address. It's actually very good. By looking away at other layers of reality, it focuses on one particular layer of reality, that provided to us by matter and energy and the stuff of the universe and what it's made of. But at the same time, there are whole other areas of discourse and narrative in human experience which we need to look at other areas of experience of life, you know, arts and music and all these other things, politics and so forth. They have their own levels of discourse, which are can be evidential, they can be evidence-based, they can be rational, they can have certain qualities that overlap, certainly with science, but which aren't actually generating scientific discourse in themselves. They can't be published in scientific journals. So it seems to me that theological discourse, let's talk about Christian theology, is, you know, it can be an academic discipline that can be as rigorous as anything that you find in science. You can, you know, you can rationalize, you can look at evidence, you can discuss, you can debate. And I'm not quite sure that those areas of human discourse are so different as you're suggesting.
We'll allow you to come back on that in just a moment, PZ, because we must just have a quick break here. But you're listening to a fascinating discussion between PZ Myers, an outspoken atheist, a biologist and associate professor at the University of Minnesota and author of the science blog Pharyngula. He's with Dennis Alexander, who's here with me in the studio. Dennis, a Christian, and we're asking, is Christian faith at odds with science? Going to give these guys sort of website areas out a little later so that you can browse those if you want. They'll, of course, be going up with this program online as well. You can find us now at premier.org.uk/unbelievable if you want to pass this program on to anyone else you know who may be interested. So do join us again in a short moment as we continue this discussion here on the program that gets Christians and non-Christians talking unbelievable.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Very excited to have with me on the phone today PZ Myers. He's well known in the atheist world, great pals with Richard Dawkins. You could describe him as a new atheist. He's a biologist and he's very outspoken in his views on religion, not least intelligent design and creationism. But in that, in as much as those his views on those things, he's in agreement with my guest Dennis Alexander, who is, as you said, a thoroughgoing Darwinian in his view of the world. But that doesn't mean a contradiction, as far as Dennis is concerned, with his Christian faith. In fact, his recent book, Creation or Evolution, Do We Have to Choose?, aims to show that Christian faith is perfectly compatible with an evolutionary understanding of the world. Dennis, the director of the Faraday Institute for Science and Religion. And just if you're listening today and thinking things are a little bit topsy-turvy, it's because we're just trying a new format for the show whereby we launch straight into the discussion and we're leaving your feedback and comments on recent shows to the end of the show. So keep listening for that if you want to hear whether you got mentioned, etc., or the views of others who are listening to this show. Lots of people do get in contact every week and you can do that by emailing unbelievable@premier.org.uk. with your views, or phone 08456 52 52 52 and select option 5. So let's continue talking, gentlemen. Is Christian faith at odds with science? And Dennis suggesting there, PZ, that obviously science offers answers to particular types of questions, but there are whole fields of areas and subjects which are asking perhaps different kinds of questions where we employ still evidentiary approaches to them, and that we shouldn't therefore discount them. I mean, can you understand that? I mean, that perhaps religion is doing that. It's looking at a different set of questions to the types of questions that science is asking.
Well, let me answer that in two ways. One is first of all that this is kind of a dodgy trick here. That, you know, one minute we're talking about is there conflict between science and religion, and then the defense that were offered is, well, science doesn't explain art, for instance. That's not what we're talking about, right? And I would say right away, yeah, no, science does not explain artistic sensibilities. It doesn't explain fashion. It doesn't explain many religious beliefs. So, of course, it's not part of that particular game. But when we're talking about tools for understanding the world, that is the kind of stuff that science, as Dennis admits, is really, really good at, that's where the conflict is. And by switching to topic of art or whatever, that doesn't save you at all. So I would be the first to admit that, for instance, science does not and should not dictate morality, that science has been really good at describing how things are, but it has a lousy track record when it comes to saying how things should be. And things like eugenics, for instance, come to mind right away. And I certainly wouldn't want to view art that was dictated by scientific principles, which doesn't sound very interesting at all. So that's one thing. We can't switch topics here if we're going to be focused. But the other thing is that if we are going to switch topics and talk about, art or morality or whatever, and if we want to talk about things like other layers of reality, well, first of all, you have to show me some reason to believe that there are other layers of reality, and just telling me that there's a religious excuse for it doesn't do that. And you also have to say why we should think that religion is necessarily better at morality or art than anything else. I know that religion has inspired a lot of great art in the past, things like Bach and so forth, but it also inspires a lot of crap.
What I'm getting from you is that you're not saying, yes, we have to have scientific method in every area of life, but that
at the very least,
if you're going to claim religious belief, you have to have some kind of scientific reason for the belief. Otherwise, it just doesn't have any standing. And is that why you say that you've got...
We've got to be narrow and focused here. That what I would say is that religion is incompatible with the execution of science. Just science. It may not be at all incompatible with doing great poetry. And I think a lot of poetry is informed by religious metaphor and so forth. So, I would say, no, I'm not going to argue with that at all. But I'm just saying that there is an incompatibility with how you analyze the world in a logical, rational, empirical manner. And that's where the conflict lies, and only in that.
Yeah, I sort of begin to see where you're coming from, I think. Although I think, so let's talk about Christian faith. I didn't want to switch the conversation to all kinds of different topics, art and morality, so much as say that I think there are different kinds of discourse which all have their own particular ways of justifying their beliefs. And obviously, I suppose a Christian would want to say they have their own particular ways of justifying their beliefs. I suppose one of the ways that Christians think is, that we had a philosopher in Cambridge, sadly died quite recently, called Peter Lipton, who wrote a book called The Inference to the Best Explanation, pointing out that actually this is the kind of way that we think across a great swathe of different areas of our lives, including our science. So obviously when we think about evolution, why do we believe in evolutionary biology? Because it provides, we would say, a very good explanation for a great swathe of data right across the different biological disciplines. So the Christian, I think, will want to come to a broader kind of question, which is not restrained within science itself, but I think it's a reasonable question to ask, is why does the universe go to all the bother of existing, which is sort of Stephen Hawking's way of putting the question. I think it's a rather nice one. Leibniz put the question more precisely, perhaps, back in the 18th century by saying, why does anything exist rather than nothing? Now, you can, of course, say, well, there's no way of finding out those questions, so let's just deal with the ones we can answer. But, I think the Christian would want to say, well, there are data, actually, that we can infer, perhaps to the best explanation, about the existence of God. We have a very finely tuned universe. We live in surprisingly his life on this planet. We seem to all live lives which everyone seems to think have some kind of purpose and meaning, even though they may not know what that is. So we live in a kind of drama, all of us, a drama which includes moral decisions and all kinds of things. So what is the inference, the best explanation for living in that kind of drama, you know, which includes the universe, the stuff of which it's made, its properties and so forth? And the Christian would want to say that God is the ground of all being and the ground of everything that exists. He's not some person we, you know, poke into the gaps in our present scientific knowledge, but is the underlying raison d'etre, if you like, the reason, the ontology, why anything exists rather than nothing. So that's called an inference, the best explanation. It seems to me a reasonable sort of way to go.
And I really don't see the virtue in tossing this God creature into the whole mix of explanations. That's unjustified. What does it add to our understanding of the universe to say, well, there was some magical, all-powerful being who did it? That's not science either, because I want to understand how it happened. I want to understand some details about this creator. I want some justifiable reasons to believe in the peculiar nature of, for instance, the Christian creator. And there's no scientific reason to believe in any of that.
No, I think you're correct. I think you're absolutely right that if you're trying to ask scientific questions about things that don't really belong to the domain of science, sort of metaphysical questions, I mean, I think you're right. We're all agreed on that. But I think that was the point that, you know, there are just lots and lots of things where science isn't really going to help us very much. But I think that doesn't mean to say that we can't have a rational, evidence-based discussion about certain things being the case or not being the case. So,
I mean, you talk about inference to the best explanation. I mean, you would say you would keep God talk out of the laboratory, but at the same time, you are talking about the idea that in the big scale, and you've mentioned things like the fine-tuning of the universe and why is there something rather than nothing, there does appear to be an inference that there is a reason for this. And you're saying it's not anti-scientific to say, well, I think a good explanation for that, a good inference, is God.
I think that is the case. And, you know, I think if we get people in the lab, for example, and we train scientists to always be asking the why question, why are things the way they are? I mean, that's the scientific question within the context of science. So why shouldn't people go on to ask the why question with a big W now, not a small W, as to, you know, why the whole show exists in the first place? What's it all about? And I think that's where Christians would want to say that actually the existence of a God who has intentions and purposes for the universe, or it may be a multiverse, it doesn't really matter actually, actually provides quite a good rationale, you know, for the existence of this strange thing. I mean, usually multiverses don't just pop into being. You know, you want a reason why anything exists rather than nothing, I think. That's where we're going with that.
I mean, you must have heard this 1,000 times, PZ, and you're just not convinced that this gets us anywhere.
Oh, not at all. Yeah, the whole fine-tuning argument just leaves me cold. It does not explain anything. We don't have to have a why. There are, I'm perfectly comfortable with the idea that many things are completely purposeless. This requirement that we have a why, that there has to be some kind of reason behind the existence of a particular phenomenon, is a good example of where religious thinking leads you astray, that we don't need that kind of specific causality in order to explain the existence of the universe.
Well, I mean, just to say, obviously, in the history of science, asking those sort of questions, like Isaac Newton, got him quite a long way. So, I mean, I think the why question, I don't see why we should bar people off from asking those kinds of questions, because, after all, it's a pretty sort of basic question to ask, isn't it, if you live all your life on this planet? You know, I mean, it seems a reasonable kind of question to ponder,
yeah.
You know, what the heck's the whole thing about? You know, so, I mean, that seems to me a perfectly reasonable kind of question to ask. I mean, I suppose you as an atheist would want to say, you know, the universe is just a brute fact, or the multiverse is a brute fact. But that doesn't get very far, really, does it? You know, one would want to say, why do you take that as a brute fact?
Well, I would say, first of all, that the one reason you're free to speculate about this God as a causal agent is that you're not doing science on it, that you are not, you know, try writing a grant that will get funded that says, okay, we're going to research into why there is a God who created the universe and how he did it. It won't fly. We focus on much smaller, more answerable questions. And when you speculate about, well, maybe there was a deity who did all this stuff, you stepped out of the bounds of science again. Those are not scientific questions.
Yeah, well, I thoroughly agree. I think we're all agreed, you know, we're not doing science at that point. But I think you believe the only, as a good scientific person, you believe that the only kind of knowledge that is reliable knowledge is scientific knowledge. But I think that's a questionable belief. I think it's undermined by, as we've been talking earlier, many different kinds of disciplines that have reliable beliefs, I would want to say. I mean, the legal profession has many reliable beliefs, but they're not scientific beliefs. You don't publish them in Nature. I mean, it just seems to me we have lots of different types of reliable belief, which are not scientific beliefs. So trying to squeeze all kinds of beliefs into scientific beliefs seems to me unnecessary.
I'm not doing that at all. I'm not saying that that law should be ruled by science, although science obviously has a contribution to make. I'm not saying that poetry should be ruled by science. And I'm perfectly comfortable with you saying that, well, we're going to use religious metaphor to create this painting. Okay, that's not a problem at all for me. What we're doing, though, is we're again doing that little trick of sidling away from the central issue of science. We're moving into metaphysics, we're moving into art, we're moving into law, and we're saying religion has a place there, that, you know, it's a human cultural institution, so of course it has a place there. But when we focus on the question, how do we understand God's world and how it works, what we found is eminently successful is to remove God from that question.
Well, I mean, yes, in terms of bringing God talk into the laboratory, I think I was sort of agreed on that. You know, science is a wonderful thing. But, I mean, just coming back to the big questions, I mean, you said, you know, that... it's interesting, isn't it, how science begins to merge with metaphysics when you start talking about multiverse. I mean, there are no experiments we can think up at the moment anyway that would falsify the idea of a multiverse and so forth. Superstring theory has been critiqued for similar reasons. That, you know, it's not yet in the experimental domain. Maybe it will become so one day. But it's interesting, isn't it, that on the borders of science, actually people end up having to address these sort of big questions, which we call metaphysical questions, almost by default. You know, they can't avoid them.
Yes, and what they do is they address them scientifically and naturalistically, and what happens is when they get the answer, they stop being metaphysical questions. I mean, things like, you know, string theory and multiverses and so forth, that's way outside my domain of expertise, and I really don't worry about that. You know, to fall back on the excuse I offered earlier, we fall back on authority a little bit. I trust the physicists, and I'm expecting them to come up with rational answers for that.
I mean, if
but things like biology, which is where both of us have our expertise, you know, is there any reason to include a God explanation anywhere in the history of biology?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I mean, I don't think not in terms of publishing papers. I wouldn't want to suggest putting God into my next paper, you know, and wherever it comes out. But I don't think that's the idea at all. On the other hand, you know, I mean, let's look at the evolutionary process. I mean, it is a very remarkable process, isn't it, which has been going on for, 3.8 billion years, I guess, since life began on this planet. It does show some arrow of evolutionary time. It's in fits and starts and so on, but, you know, no one can deny that there are things around now that are more complex than things were 3.8 billion years ago and so forth. It seems to me the existence of this kind of evolutionary narrative of complexity on a planet Earth is a sort of a rather odd phenomenon, really. I mean, I think we're so used to it because we live within it. We've forgotten how bizarre and odd it really is.
I mean, are you saying, whereas PZ would say evolution is purposeless, it is simply a law that is happening and that produces the results we see? You would say, yes, it's a law, but that doesn't mean it's purposeless. I mean, you do believe, obviously, that there is a God who purposed something from evolution.
Well, let's say I'm starting as an atheist, okay, just for the sake of argument, and I want to take where PZ is just for a second. I mean, if I'm just simply coming and looking at this really rather wonderful evolutionary process, which is magnificent, anyone who's not in awe of that whole process just doesn't understand it. You know, it is amazing that all the biological diversity on this planet has come about through this very long historical process is a remarkable fact. But if we stand back a little bit and look at the process as a whole, I mean, it does look rather intentional. I mean, the fact, you know, that consciousness and linguistic ability and the ability to make moral decisions has emerged out of matter is a very remarkable fact. You know, now, see, so I'm looking at it as a total narrative. I'm not trying to poke God in little bits of it. I'm just standing back and looking at the whole process and saying, wow, that's a very interesting drama, you know, on this little planet Earth in the midst of a big universe. That could actually give a hint, you know, there's something going on here, which is more than what I can just describe as a biologist.
PZ.
Well, again, I think this is a really common fallacy you're making. It's this idea of retrospective coronation, where you look at one particular piece of the pattern and you say, well, that's a conclusion that the process was driving towards its purpose. And people tend to naturally pick things like consciousness and minds and so forth. But, you know, you can do this for anything. You can look at scarab beetles and say, well, isn't this amazing how evolution has driven them to build such immense, amazing horns on their heads and this remarkable reproductive behavior. And this obviously was the goal of, you know, this must have been God's goal, right, is make better beetles. And I don't think it's valid that what we have here is a process that, yes, generates increasing complexity and winnows it out to, you know, generate functional complexity. And that's all you need to explain the overall pattern of what we see. We do not need to invoke some kind of purpose or, you know, a divine generator or somebody meddling and tweaking it in particular directions through evolutionary history. Those are unsupported by evidence, and they're completely unnecessary. They're a superfluous hypothesis.
Just on retrospective correlation, I mean, actually, that's what inference to the best explanation is surely all about when it comes to generating Darwinian theory. It is retrospective correlation because we are the only conscious observers, agents around who can actually do it. So I don't think it's so different from what we do in science all the time. Divine meddling, no, we both agree divine meddling is out here. We're not talking about divine meddling. I think, though, for somebody with a little bit of an artistic temperament or something like that who sees great beauty and who sees an amazing process that actually has come into being in this remarkable way, that might just sort of nudge them into asking, you know, why such a drama, why narratives should bother to exist.
I mean, but it's not a scientific question, is it, or is it?
No, that's definitely not a scientific question. It's a human question that one would hope, though, that rational human beings would probably want to ask sometime in their life. It's not a scientific question, no.
PZ.
Well, of course, the godless answer would be that we are a product of this process, and so, of course, what we're doing is we are perceiving as beauty what we find harmonious with the process that results in us. And so there's no a priori imposition of a standard of what's marvelous and beautiful and awesome here. It's whatever produces us is going to appear that way to us. So again, you know, the godless position is you don't need to have a purpose. You don't have to have some machinery set in motion by a divine being to produce this same phenomenon.
I'm not quite sure it's so much a question of need. I mean, I think you focus a lot on this word need, and I would agree with you. I don't think it's a question of need. It might be a question of rationality, that actually, on one hand, here we are, most of us who live in this world, thinking that it has some sort of purpose, and at least as far as our own lives are concerned. I mean, it's very difficult, isn't it, to live without some kind of sense of purpose. So we have that on one side, and it's actually quite a deep conviction. It's what keeps people, you know, writing grants, going to lab every day, you know, raising kids and playing baseball, whatever else you do. So that's one side of our lives. That's the personal biography side of our lives. And then we have how we kind of view, well, of course, if you say on the other side, well, ultimately the whole thing is, you know, the universe is going to have a heat death, the whole thing will be finished, will be forgotten, obviously, in a few hundred years' time, if not before. So there does seem to be a real dissonance here, actually, in one sense, between, you know, reasonable, every reasonable person would have to say there's absolutely no point of being here whatsoever. I mean, if you look at the geological time span of the universe, obviously the whole thing's pointless. If there's no ultimate, you know, no God, obviously the thing's pointless. So it does seem to me that one has to live within a real sense of cognitive dissonance here between one's personal biography and one's own conviction through life. You know, it has some sort of purpose, and yet knowing in one's heart of heart the whole thing is a waste of time, actually. Isn't that seems to be a bit irrational to me, to hold those two quite opposite views together in one life. Isn't that a bit irrational?
No, it doesn't bother me at all.
thought it wouldn't.
You kind of answered the question yourself, though, when you, yes, when you said that, you know, it's the thing that keeps us going, this sense of purpose. It's why we have kids and so forth. But, you know, the Darwinian explanation is obvious, right? That those people who didn't have that sense of purpose didn't have kids, and they're not here now, and their children aren't here. So successful, you know, successful genomes and successful cultures, I don't think that a sense of purpose is necessarily a product of genes, but more of culture. So successful cultures are going to inculcate this particular sort of belief and keep us going.
I mean, would you say, PZ, just to interrupt on that level, that religion itself, religious belief, may be an aspect of our evolutionary history, which, you know, as much as it's given benefits, that's why we have it.
I would definitely agree that it is a real part of our evolutionary history. But, you know, that when you talk to people who study, you know, religion from the scientific perspective, there's actually two views here, two broad views. One view is that, yes, like I just said, maybe religion has had this Darwinian advantage of providing a selective advantage to people, that, you know, it promotes greater social unity, it gives them a purpose, it keeps them going, and so forth. And so it's been a net positive. And then there's the other view, which happens to be my view, is that religion happens to be a byproduct, that what we have is a set of cultural processes that encourage us to go on. And those are easily hijacked by religious beliefs, and that you don't need to be religious to want to do things like get along with your neighbors and survive and have children.
But going back to the original point you made there, you think, in a sense, well, PZ's saying you've kind of been hoodwinked by your evolutionary history there, Dennis. You're actually, your only reason you like to think about having purpose, etc., is because that's been evolutionarily advantageous to us in the past.
Yeah, well, it's possible. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, giving evolutionary justifications for human behaviour is pretty difficult, as I think PZ has just sort of indicated. Nobody really agrees in the evolutionary biology field, you know, as he says correctly, you know, whether religion, whether it's a product or... of course, you can make up all kinds of stories about that, and it's very difficult to get data. I think the point here is that, though, whatever one takes to be an evolutionary product, it doesn't actually tell us all that much as to what we ought to believe. I mean, you know, it doesn't still tell us whether we have, you know, should live in a democracy or some other political system and so forth. We still have to argue the toss. You know, we still have to give our own particular reasons why something should be the case, why we believe something is the case. Whatever evolutionary little push we might have. Now, of course, you have cognitive psychologists who will tell us that actually childhood theism is the default position of children, and there's quite a lot of good data from cognitive psychology for that. That in itself, I mean, it's fascinating, you know, it doesn't actually tell you whether theism is true or not. I mean, you still have to justify theism on other grounds, I think. The fact, on the other hand, it's sort of fascinating that most of the things actually that very young kids kind of receive as part of their kit, if you like, to start off life, maths, they have, you know, pretty good maths, actually. Babies know maths. They can count. That's pretty clear. They have folk physics, you know, they know that causes and effects. They know, very young babies know that. So we're all given this sort of kit, you know, that we need for survival and so forth. And I'm very happy to think that's, you know, part of our evolutionary heritage. On the other hand, I don't know of any mathematician who doesn't think that maths has a reality which is outside of their own head. You know, they really do believe, you know, that maths exists, not just simply because we can do equations as humans, but it exists apart from us.
I've even heard it argued on a philosophical level that the very fact that we believe in a theory of evolution is dependent in some ways on a belief in a rationality that has to be independent of that evolutionary process itself, that there is a rationality which exists, which we tap into, as it were, which can't, if it were simply a product of evolution, we wouldn't be able to trust necessarily, because evolution is only a story about what brings advantage rather than what is necessarily true. That may be going off topic a bit there, but I'll just throw that one in as
well. Well, Darwin, of course, as you know, famously worried about whether his thoughts had any rationality than the thoughts of a monkey, you know, and so forth, for that kind of reasons you're indicating. Of course, if we all can't agree that we start with rationality, then all discourse ceases, basically.
We're going to have to take another quick break, yeah. And then we'll get PZ and Dennis just to wrap up their thoughts as we conclude this discussion on, is Christian faith at odds with science? I know there may be many people wanting to get their point of view across as well. As I say, I'm not representing every Christian viewpoint on this programme today. I've brought in Dennis as a theistic evolutionist, and if you're in a different camp, you know, we can't represent every viewpoint every week. But I do welcome your responses, especially as you've heard this sort of particular argument between whether God and explanations, inferences to God are allowable, you know, if you're a scientist. And is the scientific method the only valid form, if you like, of finding what truth is? Do get in touch, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. That's the usual email address. And if you want to leave a voicemail message, 08456 52 52 52 and select option 5. We'll be back in just a short moment as we conclude this conversation on Unbelievable. Welcome back to Unbelievable here on Premier Christian Radio.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
PZ Myers does find Christian faith unbelievable. What's more, he finds that it is at odds with science. PZ, maybe just as a kind of summing up, just on the basis of what's been said today, why do you find Dennis's position untenable, the idea of holding beliefs in the supernatural, in God, I suppose in the miraculous? Why is that incompatible with being, with doing good science, or the scientific process, if you like?
Well, actually, you know, listening to Dennis, I kind of get the impression that we don't entirely disagree on that, that bringing the supernatural into the laboratory is forbidden. It just doesn't work. It's got a history of failure. It gives us nothing concrete to test, and I'm confident that he'd agree with me on that particular issue, that, yeah, the scientific research program is a non-religious one, and within its domain, it works very well. Where we may disagree is whether the religious perspective has value in other areas of human endeavor, other than science, that, you know, art, philosophy, religion, whatever, all these sorts of things out there, does religion make a useful contribution to those? And we didn't touch too deeply on that, but we did skim over it a little bit. And my feeling is that personally, we don't need it. That what we have now is a large number of godless people all over the world who seem to be functioning just fine and who are just as appreciative of things like art and law and morality as their Christian fellows. And what that demonstrates in a kind of utilitarian way is simply that religion is superfluous and that we don't need it.
So
then the onus belongs to the other side to show me a good reason why we ought to bring God into our understanding of the universe.
So applying the principle, if you like, of Occam's razor, as one might in a scientific theory, you know, where the simplest explanation is the best one, you wouldn't say, you know, that the way that water freezes is the scientific thing plus some fairies in the background doing something. You'd say dispense with the thing that's obviously, you know, doesn't make any difference to the process. And you'd say the same about someone who has a Christian faith and believes in the scientific process. You'd say, well, just dispense with the one that you don't need to get the answers.
And I would also further say that, you know, they don't need to dispense with it. They can go ahead and practice their religious beliefs in private, but that if they're going to be a good scientist, they cannot bring that into the laboratory. That's all he'd say.
I mean, you have not in any way sanctioned bringing any, you know, God talk into the laboratory, Dennis. But I'm guessing you also don't agree that it's just a case of, you know, religion being a sort of unnecessary accoutrement, which is sort of neither here nor there, and frankly, probably in the interest of good science, is really unnecessary.
That's right, yes. I think, obviously, from our conversation, we do agree about not bringing, I would say, bringing God talk into the lab and that sort of thing. Again, you know, I would sort of think the same about, you know, flying airplanes or... I mean, I don't want people to think... I don't want the pilot of my next plane across the Atlantic to be worrying about metaphysics. I mean, there are appropriate times, you know, to be addressing these questions. But, yeah, I think we agreed, you know, we don't bring God talk into the lab. That's fine. Is it a kind of tag-on, you know, that some people have and others don't, a bit like playing golf? No, I don't think so, because I think a couple of reasons. I mean, obviously, again, if we just go back to the history of science, I mean, it is a fact, I think, that science has emerged from a religious worldview, one in which we have a God who has ordained laws. I mean, after all, that gave a great motivation to some of the early natural philosophers like Newton and Boyle and Descartes and people like that to actually search for laws and underlying principles in the universe. So the very idea of rationality, the search for laws in science, I think has deeply religious roots, actually deeply theological roots historically. But you could say, you could agree with that as well and still go on to say, well, yeah, but that needn't be the case today. You know, if you like, the rocket of science has been launched and we no longer need its, you know, the booster rocket of theology, which gave it such a great boost back in the 17th centuries and so forth. True, that is true. But then I would want to go on to say also, it seems to me that, you know, people are not just scientists living in the lab and doing experiments all day. They're human beings living in a complex society and complex universe who want to, I hope, ask questions about why science is possible. Why is there a rationality in the universe? That's a very curious question, isn't it? In other words, why is it possible to even do science? Why is it possible to be here, to have a rationality sufficiently in our heads to actually understand things like, you know, quantum mechanics or string theory, or to grapple with deep maths? You know, I mean, obviously these are not necessary for our survival, as far as I know. So there are all kinds of things which are not necessary for our survival in Darwinian terms, and yet which are part of the scientific process now and part of the wider discourse of what on earth are we doing here in the world. Now, it just seems to me very disappointing if, as part of our education for people, we're not stimulating people to ask big questions about life. You know, why is there anything here or nothing? Why are we here? What's the whole purpose of it? And are we not actually missing out on something in life by just thinking it's only materials and only energy and all we can describe which is important is done by the job, done by science? I don't think that's really the case. I think that for me as a Christian, knowing God in a personal way through Christ gives a huge dimension, you know, to life, which is not there simply by being a scientist in the lab. It casts my whole science in a different light because I see it as part of my worship, actually. It's part of the way I bring worship to God by understanding his created order. But also affects everything I do, the way I use my money, the way I carry out my relationships, and so forth. So, you know, it is actually something which changes the whole of life. That's why I'm a Christian.
Well, thank you very much for joining me, Dennis. PZ, thank you for joining me as well.
Thank you.
It's been really interesting to have you on the programme today. People want to find out more about PZ. He's a very, very active blogger. In fact, I think you must update that blog most days. Is that right, PZ?
The biggest science blog, yes.
Yeah, scienceblogs.com/pharyngula. You must just explain the title. I had trouble pronouncing it earlier. Where does it come from?
My academic specialty is developmental biology, and pharyngula happens to be a very interesting stage in the early development of embryos.
There you go. Well, I know something that I didn't know this time yesterday now. Thank you very much for being with me on the program, PZ.
And, my pleasure.
Thank you for contributing. Dr. Dennis Alexander, also you can find out more about the Faraday Institute, where Dennis is director. It's based in Cambridge. You can find it at st-edmunds.com. cam.ac.uk/Faraday, or you look like you're going to give me a different address.
There's a much simpler website, actually. Good. It'll get you a lot quicker. www.faraday-institute.org.
Okay,
well, that's all you need.
By the time this goes on the web page, those addresses will also be available with the program, so you can just click directly through, find out more, make up your own mind, pursue the conversation. Thank you for listening, and don't forget, if you want to get in touch about anything you've heard on the program today, you're more than welcome to unbelievable@premier.org.uk.
Thank you for listening to today's classic replay on science and Christianity, which was first broadcast on Premier Christian Radio on the 27th of June 2009. You can get in touch and listen to more classic shows from our podcast archive at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable.